his eyes rolled upwards, thinking.
Ah!
He snapped his fingers at her.
Take this one. Why do you think I rode with you, huh? Hung out at the bar with you, and why I'm here right now? Maybe I'm avoiding my sister. You know, she's always after me, wanting to set me up with a good girl. But if I'm hanging out with you, someone who probably doesn't want to deal with any of that love stuff, then what can she say?
He whispered behind his hand.
She can't say shit because she doesn't know the truth about us.
The truth?
Yeah.
He went back to piling up plates before carrying them to their spot. He said, coming back,
We're friends. No one needs to know the specifics.
Danny didn't feel a flutter in her chest when he winked at her. She wasn't noticing how sexy he looked when he was waiting for the machine to finish. He didn't look lean or gorgeous when he crossed his arms over his chest or when his dimple only half showed and she found herself wanting to make him laugh so she could see the whole dimple. No. Nothing like that was happening. And she certainly didn't drop a few glasses when she was trying to put them in the tray. Nothing like that at all. But Danny heaved a silent sigh of relief when Kate came to the doorway and hollered they were all leaving. Her gaze lingered on the two of them. Danny ignored Kate, and her relief was short-lived. Jonah waved Kate off, and 10 minutes later the two of them walked out to find the entire bar empty except for May.
Is my sister here?
They all took off. Said you had a ride.
May jerked a thumb over her shoulder.
Do me a favor. Shut the door tight after you go. Everything's locked up.
She nodded toward the back.
I got some things to take care of, so I'm heading to the office. Have a good night, you two.
She kissed Danny on the cheek before repeating her good nights and disappearing to the back. Jonah groaned as the two walked outside.
I thought Aid would come and ask me. Hell, my sister probably did this on purpose. She probably thinks that I'll go home with you.
His eyes lit up, and he flashed her a smile.
What do you think?
No, I'll just give you a ride home.
It's not worth it. It's 3:30 in the morning. I have to be on the river early. I live 30 minutes away. Come on,
he persuaded.
Loon Lake has a channel to the river. I can crash on your couch. You won't even know I'm there. I'll just have one of the guys shoot a boat down to pick me up in the morning. I've got a change of clothes at the station in my locker.
Falls River runs into Loon Lake?
Yeah, the channel's gorgeous. I'll take you on a boat ride sometime. Better yet, you should just canoe through it.
Why was she entertaining this? No, she knew why. Someone else would be there. That meant no nightmare. Maybe. They weren't as bad when Boone was with her. Then again, he was in bed with her. Still, maybe it was worth it? She heard herself saying, Fine. Jonah grinned and nudged her hip with his.
Thanks, Danny. Who knew we'd have such a great friendship?
Friendship. She fought against rolling her eyes, but couldn't stop her own grin. 12. When they got to the cabin, Danny crossed to the patio and flipped on the lamp in the corner. She didn't want all the lights on. If the whole place was lit up like a Christmas tree, that wouldn't help her fall asleep. One light cast a nice, relaxing glow through the room. Drink?
What do you have?
Knowing Aunt May, probably everything.
Beer, then. Nothing fancy.
Danny pulled out 2 bottles and walked outside to the screened-in patio. Jonah glanced around the place as he sat down.
This is nice.
It's Aunt May's, but if you ask her, she'll say it's mine. Danny uncapped both bottles and slid one over to him. It ended right in front of him.
Nice.
Danny grinned and took a sip. Bartending is like breathing to me. I helped out in May's bar for years. Then she heard herself saying, Boone never knew that about me. As soon as the words were out, she faltered. She wished she could take them back, but she couldn't. No, that wasn't true either. She didn't want to take them back. In fact, she wanted to say more.
Boone? That's his name?
That's his nickname, she frowned. And I have no idea why he was called that. He never told me. Jonas stretched his legs out, getting comfortable. But he was looking at her, and she was feeling him, and she knew she shouldn't have been. Then he murmured, almost too quietly for her to hear,
I'm guessing he didn't know where you're from.
What makes you say that?
He's not here,
Jonas stated.
If you were my girl and I proposed to you, nothing would keep me from you. I'd follow you and I would take you back. Nothing.
She looked away and ignored how her heart picked up again, or how she felt a little breathless in the chest. She hadn't felt something like this in a long time. It was alien to her, but it probably wasn't what she thought. She wasn't attracted to Jonah Bannon. They were friends. Weird friends, but friends. Putting her thoughts away, she focused on what he said. It was true. There was so much Boone didn't know about her. So much that she had chosen not to tell him. It wasn't a conscious decision, it was just, that was how it was. She just hadn't told him all those details about herself.
The gang liked you tonight.
Jonah tipped his head back and took a large swallow. He was watching her over the tip of his beer. She averted her gaze. I liked them too. Lori was a bit iffy, though I didn't talk to her.
Lori is a bit iffy.
Robbie asked me if I thought Lori would be a good mother.
What?
Jonah laughed.
You must have been drunk. What'd you say?
I told him that if he was asking a stranger, he probably knew the answer.
Robbie knows the answer. He's just comfortable with those girls. Kate's so far off on that guy, but he's clueless.
Most guys are, Danny noted. She set her bottle on the table. What else do you know? She returned his gaze, almost like a challenge. She lifted her chin up, just half an inch. I feel like there's a lot more you know than you let on. Jonah let out a small grin.
I know that my sister worries about Kate. I know that my sister feels guilty because she's always been accepted and Kate has to fight for it. I think Robbie might develop a little crush on you if you give him attention.
She held up a finger. Noted. No nice attention to Robbie. Jonah's grin deepened and he kept going.
I know that Bubba secretly loves it when Aiden and Kate drag him onto the dance floor. I know that Stilts has a thing for Lori. You can't say anything about that, by the way. And I know that Aiden and Kate both really like you.
Danny held her breath, but Jonah continued, a slow drawl.
Kate feels a camaraderie with you, because you weren't accepted by your family like she wasn't accepted by everyone in town. And she idolizes you because you stood up to your sister.
I did?
You're not hiding from your sister. In Kate's mind, that means you're standing up to her. And you are.
Danny was starting to feel warm. She glanced to the beer. Maybe it was the two sips she took. Jonah's voice was beginning to feel like a soothing caress.
Kate was scared of Erica, and she's scared of Julia. And I think Kate and Aiden are both relieved they don't have to talk with Lori or Brooke anymore. There's another female around, so it's not as obvious when they want to snub Robbie's girlfriends.
He pulled his legs in, set his beer down, and turned to face her more squarely. His baritone softened again.
I know that Kate has a little crush on me, but she'll never act on it. And I know that you let me come here tonight because of a reason. I'm just trying to figure out what it is.
They didn't know her. Kate, Aiden, that group. But they wanted to, and Jonah knew things she hadn't even told him. She looked down to where he was holding his beer, still sitting on the little table between them. It's a little alarming how intelligent you are. Jonah chuckled.
So, Danny, what's the reason you let me come back here with you?
She held her breath. Her hands tightened around her beer. She looked back up, saw that he was even closer. His eyes held hers captive. He asked again.
What's the reason you brought me here tonight? Do you want me to hold you and keep the nightmares at bay? Is that it?
She didn't move. She didn't dare. Her body was already heated and her lips became parched. He leaned forward and his eyes were downright smoldering in the soft lamp glow.
Or maybe you want me to screw you? Do you want me to make you forget that other guy?
A normal girl would have gotten pissed. But Danny wasn't like other females, and pushing the lust at bay, she saw right back into him. She said, You're either a dick who pretends to be a good guy, or you're a good guy who can be a dick. Because right now, you're being a dick no matter what.
You haven't picked.
God, those three words. Her heart was racing. No. She shook her head, trying to calm her body's reaction. Maybe you're pushing on me because you want to know more truth from me. Is that it? He remained cool. He lifted up an eyebrow and smirked.
What do you think?
He was an asshole. His words struck deep. Then again, maybe that was his intention in the first place. To go deep, make her feel something. Well, she was. She was feeling all sorts of things, and she didn't know if she should ask him to screw her or... She went with the other choice. Nightmares. The words tumbled from her. I get them, and I hate them. I honestly hate them. If I could murder and destroy them, I would, but they're in my mind. I can't destroy that. I'm tired of hearing water rushing down on us and screams as everyone is running for cover. I'm really goddamn tired of hearing the sound when someone gets trampled. Have you ever heard someone get stampeded? You can hear the bones cracking under the weight, and then it's nothing. It's a dull sound after that, like they're a sack of potatoes. But that's not even the worst. The breathing stops. They're gasping for breath. They start to wheeze. It turns into a gasping sound until they choke on their last breath. Then nothing. She didn't talk about the other type of breathing, the kind where it's quiet, like when someone is sleeping. You know they're going to die. They haven't eaten or drank anything in days. When they stopped emptying their stomachs. When they just lay there and you can't help them. You can't make it go away. You just lay there with them and listen to the next soft breath because when they stop breathing, that's when you know you're lying next to a dead child. She didn't talk about that sound because it was the worst of all. Jonah murmured so damned gently.
A buddy of mine told me once that he could handle the nightmares. He always knew to just expect them, but it was the flashbacks that got him. He said they'd rip through him like a scorned tornado.
Scorned tornado. She felt her mouth curve up at that. What happened to him?
A kid went under. He tried to save him, but the undercurrent swept the kid out of his grasp. The body had moved farther down the river by the time he got to him. It was too late. He said when they found the body, he couldn't get the eyes out of his head. They were glossed over.
He wasn't looking at her, but staring out the screen to the water. The moonlight shone down on it, and the wind was making small ripples over the surface. Was he thinking of that kid right now? Imagining him? Or was his buddy actually himself? Jonah must have seen more than his fair share of dead bodies, but it was true. One minute, life was there, and the next, there was nothing. No life. No soul. Nothing. A person would keep looking, expecting them to suddenly become alert. Life would come back to them. But it didn't happen. Once they were gone, they were gone. Her voice dropped to a hoarse whisper. She was holding onto her beer like it was a life preserver. They stopped breathing. They stopped moving, even the slightest twitches. Sometimes the fingers were the only things that moved, and I just knew when the little pinky stopped moving, I couldn't bring myself to look in the eyes after a while. She'd never admitted that before, not even to herself. Can we not? Her voice was hoarse. Can we not talk about this anymore?
Want to get pissed drunk instead?
Yes. That was what they did. She remembered asking him to hold her when she got sleepy. She remembered holding his hand and saying, Boone would hold my hand sometimes in the hospital. She remembered him asking,
Did that help?
She didn't remember what she said after that, except he stood up and held out his hand.
Come on.
He pulled the bed covers back. Danny crawled under the covers, and she remembered him holding her. He was wrapped all around her. She remembered asking, Why are you doing this?
I don't really know.
He pressed a kiss to her shoulder.
Go to sleep.
And she remembered curling her fingers around his. 13. Danny slipped out from underneath Jonah's arm. 6 in the morning. They'd slept for a few hours. Not long, but long enough for her. After the bathroom, she went to the kitchen for coffee and rested against the counter. She hadn't had the nightmares, but she dreamt of Erica instead. Her little sister had been at the end of her bed. She smiled, beautifully, and Danny remembered feeling the love from her sister. It was warming, and it felt pure. When Erica turned and left, that was when Danny woke up. And the weird part was next. She wanted her sister to be there. It felt so real.
Hey.
Danny started, seeing Jonah in the doorway. He asked,
Did you have a nightmare?
No, I woke up a few minutes ago.
It's a little after 6.
Jonah yawned as he raked a hand through his hair.
I'll need to go in, but that's not for a bit. Come back to bed. We can sleep a little longer.
It sounded wonderful, but her hands curled tighter around her coffee cup. Jonah, I... Jonah waved her off.
I know.
She didn't say anything more and followed him back to the bed. He crawled in first and held the covers up for her as she slid in. He pulled her against his side, but stayed on his back. Within seconds, Danny heard the slow, methodical breathing from him and knew he had fallen asleep. She stayed awake, but remained tucked under his arm. She kept her eyes open, just in case. But no Erica came again, and when she knew she couldn't sleep, she slid out of his arms again. Instead of heading back for more coffee, she went for a quick run. He was on the dock when she came back. She waved from a few yards away.
I'll stop here. Don't want to foul odor you to death.
Jonah grinned.
Much appreciated, but I'm a man. I've smelled worse, guaranteed.
Don't tell me I didn't warn you.
Jonah moved to sit on the end, his toes in the water, and he patted the seat next to him. There was enough room for two between the posts.
How far did you go?
Far enough.
Jonah shook his head.
How far?
3 miles. He whistled softly.
Must have run pretty hard to get back when you did.
Think I was trying to outrun my problems, Danny admitted ruefully, kicking her feet lightly in the water.
The water felt good, but that just meant the day was going to be a scorcher.
What woke you the second time?
Danny knew he wouldn't buy a non-answer, but she shrugged. She didn't want to talk about it. Nothing. She stared ahead, but Jonah stared at her. She felt his appraisal, and she held her breath, knowing he'd continue with his questions. It wasn't that she didn't trust him. She was beginning to. It was that she didn't want to voice the words. Once she did, once she heard them out loud, there was no going back. Half the battle was accepting the haunts and talking about her dead little sister, who was one ghost she didn't want to discuss. Not yet. And then an approaching boat interrupted them. Danny almost leapt to her feet alongside Jonah as he waved them down. She felt a knot unravel, just a little bit inside of her. The boat veered toward them. A second later, Danny stood and saw Trenton Galloway grinning back at them, one hand over his eyebrows to help see against the rising sunlight. "Trenton Galloway works for you?" He was another memory from high school. He'd been in Jonah's rough group of friends, but also ran the student council. She was pretty sure he was one of the basketball captains, too. Jonah grasped the boat's front and climbed inside.
"I run the river. Everyone works for me. They just don't know it." "Hey, Danny."
Trenton lifted a hand, already reversing the boat.
"Heard you were back."
"Sure am."
But her gaze was on Jonah as he helped push off the dock. Grinning at her, he held her look until they turned the boat around and sped back through the lake's canal. The waves slowly melted, and the lake shone smooth once more, a glass reflection from the blue ocean above.
"Good riddance."
Danny took a deep breath as she held onto a steel post on the end of her dock. The floorboard creaked and protested as she shifted her feet. She'd never allowed Boone a window into her soul. The shutters were always drawn, but he'd never asked. She'd let Jonah share her bed, hold her hand, and comfort her. He'd done more than Jake and Boone combined. Well, almost. Danny shook off the unsettling thoughts and moved back inside. The coffee had been good, but she craved some tea. After a shower, a change, and a quick inventory of the kitchen, she only had enough for that day. She'd have to go back to town again, and as she drove past some fields, a cow was in a ditch on the wrong side of the fence. It had a black body with a white-tipped nose. Danny knew the nearest home belonged to Mrs. Bensfield. There was a billboard positioned at the end of the driveway. It was supposed to proclaim the owner's age, and every year she got older, Mrs. Bensfield bought a cow. The number read 52, but the paint was faded. She wasn't going to hold her breath that the number was repainted until there was a new owner. Danny glanced at the rest of the cows standing on the right side of the fence and eyeballed more than 52, but if one could get out, others could follow. Danny tried finding the hole in the fence, but couldn't, and she ended up turning into the driveway. Rounding a bend in the driveway, the farmhouse came into view and Danny parked just before the garage. A small picket fence closed in a garden, greeting the house's front side. Except for a smattering of oil-streaked rags piled on the front porch, the two-story white house looked clean. It looked like it had recently been painted. Danny never got a tour of the place, at least not at any age she could remember, but she remembered visiting with her mother a few times. She mostly remembered the chocolate chip cookies. After her mother passed, Mrs. Bensfield was nice, but she'd never been on good terms with Aunt May. So the visit stopped, and so did the chocolate chip cookies. Not many of the upstanding citizens of Craigstown acknowledged a friendship with the owner of May's Grill, one of the busiest businesses in Craigstown. It didn't matter. Her Aunt May's background of boozing and floozing still set the precedence, and so any friendship that might have been there would never see daylight. Aunt May never cared. Danny thought she actually preferred it, because she could do what she wanted and say what she wanted. Folks would keep coming to May's Grill no matter what. It was too popular among the tourists and locals. But Mrs. Bensfield was on the different side of the tracks. She wasn't one of the upstanding citizens, but she wasn't one of the other citizens like Aunt May. Mrs. Bensfield just lived in her own little world. Remembering all of that, she wasn't sure what she was in store for as she knocked on the screen door.
"Hello? Mrs. Bensfield?"
It was loose, so it rattled in the doorframe with each knock. Danny was hesitant to knock harder. She didn't want to bust through the screen on her first adult visit. Not hearing a response, she turned and walked to the backyard. Nothing. Danny checked the garage. Two vehicles were inside. Mrs. Bensfield's van, the world's largest daisy painted on it, Danny saw it had just been given a fresh covering, just like the house, still sat in the same place Danny remembered from her visits. A red Volkswagen was next to it, with a foot thick of dust. Danny didn't want to intrude in the house, so she tried the barns next. The shed was empty, only home to an antique trailer and grain binds. The main barn was unlocked, and Danny stepped inside, finding herself in the milking room with the aroma of drying milk inside. Heading down a small hallway, she opened the door and a bunch of cats scattered in every direction. Expecting to find feeding stalls, she saw instead that half of the interior had been renovated into a pottery studio. The left side still had the stalls where the cows were fed and milked. "Mrs. Bensfield?" Her voice echoed across the barn.
"Huh? Who there?"
Mrs. Bensfield called back, her voice shrill. Danny couldn't locate her.
"It's me, Mrs. Bensfield. Danny O'Hara."
"What? What you say? I thought a moment you said Danny O'Hara, but that can't be right. That girl's been dead a long time."
The voice was still distant, and both voices kept echoing.
No, it's me, Mrs. Bensfield. I came back home."
No, it's me. I'm just fooling in the head again. Little Daniela O'Hara was taken by that cancer. I know because her mother came crying to me, 34 back then."
Danny caught her breath. She hadn't heard words spoken about Sandra, ever. It had been an understood rule. No one talked about her grandmother. Mrs. Bensfield mused to herself.
"Oh, no, I know you's in my head. Little Daniela O'Hara died long while back, left 3 rabbits behind, and her mother just sobbed and sobbed. No one knows what to do. No one knows what to do. Little Daniela O'Hara was the minx and angel, I tell you. Half minx and half angel, that one. No one knows what to do."
Danny took a hesitant step forward. Crossing toward the pottery studio, she continued to hear Mrs. Bensfield mutter and realized she was in a back room where a heavy plastic curtain was hung from the ceiling.
"I knows, I'm just hearing my own voices. Memories, that's what they are. Little Daniela O'Hara always came around these parts. She just took a liking to Oscar, that she did. No one knows what to do. Her mother always cried to me, thought I was supposed to know what to do, but I didn't. Clueless, just like the rest of them. Oh, no. That girl's just back to haunt me. Always knew it was coming. Always knew it was coming."
Danny paused at the doorway and saw Mrs. Bensfield's petite figure. She wore a loose, long-sleeved shirt, as big as the old woman was, and she was bent over a pot. Mrs. Bensfield was circling with a paintbrush in hand, pausing sporadically to lean forward and make a dab. She was adding detail to the pot. Danny saw herself staring into an oncoming ocean wave, and she suddenly felt, literally felt, the waves coming for her. Choking in a breath, she steeled herself. The waves crashed back, and she heard the first scream.
"Daniela O'Hara?"
Mrs. Bensfield stood frozen, hand raised, clenching a small paintbrush. Danny blinked, pushing the memory away.
"Mrs. Bensfield, I came in because I saw..."
"No!"
Mrs. Bensfield interrupted, waving the paintbrush at her, stabbing the air.
"Do you know what you've been doing to me? Years of guilt, girl, years of guilt, and here you are, living, breathing, and part of my delusions. I want you out. Out!"
No, Mrs. Bensfield, it's me, Danny O'Hara. I'm Daniela's daughter. I came in because I saw one of your cows got loose. She's in the ditch."
Mrs. Bensfield sniffed and crossed her arms. The paintbrush smeared paint across her face and arm, but she didn't notice as she stared intensely at her. She circled Danny's form, studying her from every angle. Then she murmured,
"You're the best damn delusion I've ever had. I must have had an extra dose of mushrooms in that last batch."
The lady wasn't senile. She was high. "Mrs. Bensfield, I am not a delusion, and I am not my mother's ghost here to haunt you. I am here because one of your cows got loose." Her head inclined forward an inch. "A cow."
"Oh!"
She waved the paintbrush in a dismissing manner.
"That's Goldeneye. She wanted to go for a walk, so I let her loose. Don't worry, she'll come back."
Mrs. Bensfield.
No.
Mrs. Bensfield turned back to her pottery and hunched down on her haunches. She returned to painting.
"Goldeneye always comes back, always has, always will. You can either take off or you can sit and entertain me a bit."
Danny sighed.
"Don't get snippy with me. You're my delusion.
Danny glanced back to the door, but sat on an empty chair in the corner. She'd never known that Mrs. Bensfield knew her grandmother. She wanted to know why her mother's ghost would be haunting the Potter. Why would I be haunting you? Mrs. Bensfield sniffed, wrinkling her nose at Danny.
You know why. Don't play that game with me, not with me, girly ghost.
I'm here and I'm haunting you, but I don't know why. I'd at least like to know why. I'm an amnesiac ghost. Mrs. Bensfield fixed her with another hair-raising stare. Then she shrugged.
Because you loved my Oscar and I wouldn't have any of that.
Oscar Bensfield was Mrs. Bensfield's son. He went missing 30 years ago, and the story was that he fought with his mother over his absent father. He wanted to find him. She didn't. But he swore he would, and that night he walked to the woods and never came back. The story was told over campfires and during sleepovers. The moral had been to avoid empty threats. Some argued he hadn't made an empty threat. He was still searching for his vagabond father, but some thought he'd gotten snatched and murdered. Still, others always said Mrs. Bensfield killed him in a rage because he dared defy her word. Danny always rolled her eyes every time she heard the story. It was a stupid rumor created by mothers to scare their children from using emotional blackmail, but she found herself asking, "Did he love me?"
"Delusions are supposed to be all-knowing, not all-stupid," Mrs. Bensfield said matter-of-factly, dabbing away.
Danny held her breath. She waited a beat.
"Did he father my children?"
Mrs. Bensfield froze. Her hand stopped mid-motion, and then, after a second, she stood slowly and rotated on her feet to stare at Danny.
"Oscar Bensfield was my son, and he was no father to any of your children. You get that in your head and stop showing up around these parts. I took a shovel to you 30 years ago, and I'll take a shovel to you today."
Danny stood slowly, hands fisted at her side. "Are you sure he wasn't my father?" Mrs. Bensfield blinked, but remained in place. She shook her head and muttered,
"Don't need these headaches. Don't need these delusions. Headaches and delusions. I have to lay off those mushrooms. Did you hurt my mother?"
Danny's voice rose, quaking just a bit.
"Stop playing with me. We both know what happened. Your mother's been in the insane asylum since Oscar took off. You should have gone with her for all the foolhardy things you were saying. My Oscar would never touch a piece of filth like you. We both know that. Just get on raising those bastards of yours."
Danny stepped forward. "Bastards? Bastards of whose? I want to know."
"It was the other vagabond. Although he wasn't no vagabond by my standards, kept coming back to sire the last two, didn't he? Vagabonds come and go. That's how they do it. That's how my Oscar was born."
"You kept your son from being my father?" Mrs. Bensfield frowned and stepped back as Danny stalked forward, one step by one step, a slow and menacing game of cat and mouse. "Where's my grandmother?" Confusion crossed the elder woman's features a moment, and she answered,
"Your grandmother's in the grave, Daniela, you know that. You held my hand at her funeral."
"Where's my mother?" Danny asked instead.
"The asylum, I already told you, but you know that. You kept it from your two sisters, remember? A secret to the grave, that was our agreement."
"What asylum? I don't remember."
"St. Francis over in Petersburg. You've been visiting her all your life. I don't know why you forgot that. Don't make no sense. Delusions don't make no sense."
She bent back over her work, muttering to herself,
"Subconscious my ass."
"Mrs. Bensfield," Danny said firmly. The old lady turned back, slightly irritated at the intrusion. "I am not a delusion, and I am not the Daniela O'Hara that you remember. I am her daughter, Danielle. I was named after my mom, and I will come back. Be sober when I do. I want some answers." She knew Mrs. Bensfield would just shake her head, convince herself it was a weird hallucination, and go back to painting. Danny didn't care. she remembered her mother with dancing spices and magical powers. Mrs. Bensfield remembered her mother with suspicion, hauntings, and secrets to the grave. Danny didn't like knowing that her mother would take a secret to the grave. She drove until she found Goldeneye. As she drew closer, the cow didn't move. She had a halter on with a strap attached and didn't bat an eye when Danny led the cow back down the road. A gate wasn't too far away. Danny unlatched it, led the cow back inside. Once inside, she unclasped the halter and took it off, draping it over a post as she headed back to her car. Just before she was about to get in, Danny turned and looked back toward Mrs. Bensfield's home. She had walked this road many times, driven the same gravel, and she even cried here after a few fights with Jake. She never thought about the older woman, but she noticed now that the home lay under foot of two massive oaks, as if protecting it with giant hands shielding the sun's rays. It always had a peaceful air to the home. Or so she used to think. 14. Danny was on her dock that evening when Aunt May arrived. She didn't have to look back to know who it was. Only one person could walk that irritated without sound.
"You need a damn cell phone."
Aunt May plopped beside her and tugged the Afghan Danny had on her lap to cover her as well. "I traveled, Aunt May. The whole point of me leaving was not to get in touch with anyone back here." Aunt May sat silent, then harrumphed.
"Well, that's all done. You're here, you're staying, and it's time you got one."
She patted her leg. "You think so, huh?"
"I sure damn do. Stop with the bait and hook game. I'm too irritated to bite the bait."
Her word was final, set in stone and passed by legislation. Danny chuckled silently to herself. "I love you, Aunt May."
"I love you, too."
"And I'll go get a cell phone tomorrow." Danny waited and added, "Right after I steal my mother's picture." She didn't have to wait long. It only took a second before Aunt May sputtered and exclaimed,
"You're doing what? From where?"
She frowned.
"I'm surprised any still exist. Catherine was always a bit irrational, and she could be mean. I thought she would have tossed everything out."
Danny held her breath, remembering Mrs. Bensfield's proclamations. "Why was Aunt Catherine so irrational? Was your mother like that?"
"Oh."
Aunt May's frown deepened, and she plucked at the blanket on her lap.
"I suppose. Your mother and Catherine never wanted to talk about your grandmother, but I got enough black sheep in me to handle it. No, my mother had all these ideas and grand schemes in life. She'd either be on top of the world or she'd be thinking the world was on top of her. No, your grandma wasn't all right in the head at times. I'd like to think Catherine got more than her fair share of our mother."
"Part did my mom get?"
"She got the dreamer. Catherine got the scheming part, some of her paranoia, too."
"And you?"
"Oh."
A smile warmed her face.
"I got the wild streak, but I got some of her demons. Too much boozing, too much whoring, and too many life lessons learned the hard way. That was me. Yep, up until the day your mother asked me to take care of you."
Danny caught her breath.
"I stopped living your grandmother's dreams, thinking they were mine, and I turned serious. I think she knew you wouldn't take to Catherine."
"Aunt Catherine didn't take to me."
No, that wasn't it."
Aunt May's voice was firm.
"I'm betting your mother knew Catherine wouldn't mold you, so she came to me. That's back when she found out she was going to go and Catherine wasn't accepting it, you see. I think Catherine lived in denial of your mother's sickness."
"Why didn't you guys ever talk about Grandma?"
"Oh," Aunt May sighed softly. "It was more about what she didn't do than what she did do. I lived through it, but I was the first out of the home, so I guess I didn't see the worst to come. I heard about it, and I always thought Catherine and your mother got a little brainwashed against me. Your grandmother and I used to fight. Those were ugly fights. Nasty." You said it was about what she didn't do?
She didn't love us. Not the way it's supposed to be, you know. She put herself first. I think a part of all of us came from your grandmother, but I'd like to think I partied my selfish streak out of me. I knew enough to know when my little sister Danny came to me, that meant my universe shifted. I needed to change, and she informed me of that. She said she would not have my lifestyle influencing her children, and I needed to straighten up if I wanted to be a part of your life.
Another memory tinged with a bitter lining. Danny remembered standing at her mother's funeral, staring at that casket in the ground. Julia and Erica were huddled against Aunt Catherine's sides with her arms holding both, all three with tears on their faces. Danny stood alone. She'd yet to throw her pink rose inside, but she bit her lip to keep from crying. Then May was there, and she nudged her hand with her own. "You held my hand at the funeral." A hoarse chuckle ripped from Aunt May's throat.
I'd been standing in the back, all self-conscious and not knowing what the hell I was supposed to do. Your mother only spared one conversation with me in years, but you looked so lost and lonely. A little puppy that just realized her mother wasn't coming back for her.
You picked me up, and Aunt Catherine thought it was the most horrible thing that could have happened. I remember that.
Catherine has some of our mother's jealousy, too. She was clueless, didn't know how to even speak with you, but she couldn't stand the thought that I might know. You and me, Danny, we speak the same language. Your two sisters, they speak Catherine's language. Your mother knew that.
Her mother had known her. Her mother had looked out for her. Danny blinked her own tears back, holding tighter onto the blanket.
Your mother was a good one,
Aunt May's voice rasped out, thick with emotion.
Life's not been easy for you, but you had one great mother. You got a good start in life.
Dancing herbs and magical spices. Danny closed her eyes, but chuckled. Erica used to sneak into my bedroom. She'd tell me that it was because our mom came to her. She wanted Erica to check on me, make sure I was okay. Danny grinned fondly. Erica was scared of the dark. She slept with me for 3 years.
Erica loved you. She looked up to you.
Not when she used her. Not when she betrayed her. Not when she forgot Danny was in love with someone. Erica hadn't idolized her then. Danny pointed out, until she was 11. It was Julia after that. May's hand came down over hers.
Erica was an idiot.
She squeezed lightly.
Pure and simple, tried and true. That girl was an idiot. She loved you, and I knew she loved you. She worshipped the ground you walked on.
A tad dramatic, but Danny enjoyed her aunt's flair.
I know you think I'm just exaggerating, but I'm not. Your sister, your littlest sis, she, Erica, was a lot like you, more than you think. She kept the world away, like you do, Danny.
You keep the world away. Erica did that.
She gave one face for everyone to love, but she had another face behind her. Your little sister, I watched her. I saw it. She wasn't the Erica everyone thought.
What? Danny asked. She wasn't really as self-absorbed as I thought? She didn't want to be a goddess like everyone deemed her? It was laughable, and it was bullshit.
Why do you think she fell in love with Jake?
Danny frowned.
Aunt May added, I never talked much to those two, but I saw plenty. Julia with her nose in the air, prancing in Catherine's shoes. You skulking wherever you thought no one would look, and Erica was the youngest. She watched, too. She got by. She played the part Catherine wanted, but she kept you in her rear-view mirror at all times. Your little sister. She idolized you, no matter what you say. I know it.
She continued.
Little Erica was smart, smarter than Julia. She had everyone in town wrapped around her pinky, but by my thinking, she hadn't counted on her fatal mistake.
Danny wrapped her fists in the blanket now. She fell in love with your Jake, and your Jake fell in love with her. Danny closed her eyes as if to ward off the impending assault. She loved him because he loved you. I've had a few years to ponder the two of them. I've come to my conclusions, and I've got to say that Jake loved her, hook, line, and sinker. It was the part of you that she had inside of her. That's who he fell for.
Danny caught her breath and released it slowly.
Erica took a part of you that she loved, and she made it a part of herself. That's who Jake fell for, and I know it'll hurt, but Jake was needed by Erica.
What? The words cut from Danny's throat. You don't think I needed him?
No, Aunt May continued. Not like she did. Jake was her soul. You were his, but he was hers. She needed him. You didn't, and that's what reeled that boy in. You didn't need him, Danny. You didn't need anyone.
Did she need Jake? What about Boone?
That boy didn't know what train was coming his way. Erica was the train, and she barreled over him, but she didn't know. She didn't have no stupid driver. Erica was playing life, just like the rest of us. She was going forward, but she couldn't stop. She had no idea until you left.
Danny stood, holding the blanket around her. I don't want to hear any more.
You got to. Aunt May scrambled to her feet. Because you have a sister in the grave you haven't mourned yet. You have to mourn her. You gotta make right with her.
She's dead, Danny snapped. She's dead. She doesn't give a rat's ass what I think.
You're not. That's what I'm getting at.
Aunt May was right there, right in her face. She didn't blink an eye.
You're alive, and you've survived hell, though you don't speak about it. I know the look, but you're standing and you're alive. You survived, but you ain't living.
Erica wasn't either. Danny couldn't breathe. Her chest was constricted. Erica was dead. She hadn't felt her sister leave, yet she'd felt the children die. That was the point.
You gotta make right with your ghosts. Erica didn't mean to fall in love with Jake, but she needed to.
How can you say this? Erica had Catherine. Erica had everyone, but May was her aunt. She was supposed to be on her side.
Because I know you better than anyone else.
Aunt May grabbed Danny's shoulders.
And I know how strong you are, how courageous you are, how beautiful you are. You left holding your head high because you lost your boyfriend. You and Jake were together all your life. News alert. If you didn't need your boyfriend for that long, he's not the one for you.
I loved him. The words ripped from her throat. I loved him and she took him.
You're not fighting Julia, Danny. You're fighting Erica. She's alive and she is a ghost to you right now. Her body's in the ground, but she's around. She will be until you're finally at rest with her.
Where had this come from? Where had any of this come from?
You feel guilt, Aunt May murmured, quieting. You gotta push that aside and start living. It's stopping you from living. I don't know what you're guilty about. If it's Erica dying, your mother dying, I don't know. Or that you didn't fight for Jake, I don't know. But I see those demons in your eyes. Me, finding you here, sitting alone and damn near chilled. That pisses me off. You should have a husband beside you, and you should be happy, not a numb robot.
What is this? An intervention on guilt? Don't come here and tell me what I'm messed up on, who I'm fighting. It wasn't my fault she up and died. Her voice cracked, and it took her a moment to regain it.
Erica is supposed to be here, and she is supposed to be apologizing to me. I'm not in the wrong. It's not me who should be apologizing to her.
She apologized, Danny. It took about 2 years, but she did. She came and talked to me. She changed because of you. Erica knew what she did, that she lost you.
I don't want to hear this. Danny started for the cabin. She did what she did best. She left. 15. She grabbed her keys and was down the road within a second. Dust skirted underneath her tires, spitting the gravel behind her. She drove without thinking, and when she parked, she found herself on a cliff that overlooked Falls River. She closed her eyes, drawing in a breath. Another painful memory. Two trails led down to a pool of water below the cliff. There was a small cave that was underneath. It was where she and Jake first made love. Danny climbed from her car and moved to a trail. It looked the same, but the brush had grown over it, nearly erasing the trail. It was years of remembrance that highlighted the trail as she made her way downward. It seemed a bit steeper, but flooded topsoil may have had a hand. As she came to the bottom, two buckets were placed near the bank, with one containing different mussels and shells. The cave hadn't remained a secret. A large bubble popped the surface, and a dark shape quickly followed. Two heads broke the surface, complete in diving suits and snorkeling equipment.
Hey!
A smile broke out as he peeled off his goggles and his mouth dropped the snorkel mouthpiece. Still attached around his head, it fell to his neck, and Danny found herself meeting Jonah's dark eyes.
What are you doing here?
His colleague peeled off another pair of goggles. It was the same Trenton Galloway who steered his boat to her dock. He waved before ducking back underneath the water. Jonah hoisted himself up and sat on the bank.
What are you guys doing here?
Jonah sifted through the bucket.
We found this cave a little while ago.
What's with the...
Danny gestured to his hand.
It's a freshwater mussel we found. This was supposed to be extinct, but Trent thinks we've found the next greatest discovery since the Red River ran north.
What?
Jonah studied the mussel and replied, distracted.
It's a river on the Minnesota and North Dakota border. It goes up where all the others go down.
Not what she meant. Why are you here? How did you find this place?
Oh, Jake told us about it. He said he used to come here all the time as a kid. Oh.
Understanding dawned in his shoulders as he suddenly glanced up, wide-eyed.
This was...
I found this place, not Jake.
Danny sat beside him. Rolling up her pants, she slipped her feet into the water and felt its warmth against the cold air. This was a day when one shivered as they came up for air. The water served as a warming blanket. Jonah continued to watch her.
Any consolation, but this mussel's going to be on the cover of Rivers and Streams. It really is a find. There's a research team coming to town in a month just for this sucker.
And they're going to violate my cave.
Sorry.
No, you're not.
You're right, I'm not. But I understand, if that's worth anything.
This was my spot with Jake. It went without saying. Jonah was quick on the draw, but she felt the need to say it.
Trenton decided to reappear that moment and grinned at them.
This is awesome, Jonah. Another load and we'll have a good enough find to get some grant money for this river.
Jonah shot a cautious look in her direction. Trenton waved at her.
Ah, it's Danny. She won't say anything. Besides, it'll go public in 2 months. Plenty of time to solidify our ownership before any freshwater pirates join up.
Freshwater pirates?
Trenton hoisted himself on the other side of Jonah.
When a lot's been found like this and it has some serious scientific finding, there's always going to be someone else trying to cash in.
Which isn't necessarily a bad thing in the scientific world.
Trenton shrugged.
Yeah, but we want to make sure all the new grant funds are going to come through our department. When the magazine comes out, the word will be officially out. Research teams are going to pop up around Craigstown like ticks in the summer.
Danny cringed and started itching. Thanks for that thought. Trenton laughed and rifled through the bucket, still in Jonah's hand.
What are you doing here, by the way?
Danny shrugged. Felt like a drive down memory lane. Jonah's eyes sharpened, and Danny knew he hadn't bought it. Trenton looked up.
Huh? This used to be Jake and Danny's spot. Oh,
Trenton grimaced.
Sorry, Danny. This spot's going public from now on.
No doubt. So, what's so special about these muscles? If she was going to lose her secret spot, she might as well know what the sacrifice was for, if it was worthwhile. Trenton flashed another blinding grin, and Danny remembered why he'd been their prom king, but he remained silent, letting Jonah do the explanation.
There's a few different benefits from this find,
Jonah started out, and Danny realized how truly excited he was. He really did love this river.
The first is that this mussel was thought to be extinct, and this bed is the largest bed of mussels I've ever heard about. That's huge for Falls River because it means it's pretty damn healthy considering the dam blocks up the water's travel. The more mussels, the healthier the water system. Plus, they have a natural gray pearl inside. The financial market's going to go crazy over the gray pearl.
It was a bit astounding how one piece of shell could ensure a river's safety. Danny lifted one of the mussels out of the bucket and held it up. It looks disgusting. Its shell was slimy, black, and repulsive. A dead fish hung off the side of it. Jonah and Trenton laughed. Trenton piped up,
"That's its decoy for fish. Fish bite onto it, thinking they're about to have a meal. The glochidia are released inside, and voila, the mussel just landed itself a plane ride for its little babies. The female mussel has her eggs transported into this glochidia stuff. The fish carries it downstream until they drop and form little baby mussels."
Smart little buggers.
Nah, they're just another part of nature.
Jonah stood up and kicked off his diving fins.
Nature's pretty damn miraculous if we wouldn't stop killing it.
Danny glanced up, a little startled at the vehemence in his tone. Jonah had always been charming. A good old boy who drew the ladies in like bees to honey. She'd heard of his ruthlessness in business dealings, but she'd never seen him angered. She heard it now, laying just underneath the bitterness. "I never would have thought the two of you would become nature lovers," she asked. "What do you need to help this research study go faster?"
"What?"
"You said you only had 2 months. What do you need? Volunteers? Money?"
"This needs to be as quiet as possible."
Jonah held up a hand.
"We don't even know if this is the mussel we're thinking about. The research team is going to identify it, no matter what species it is."
"Why wait a month? Why can't they be here before then?"
"That's as soon as we can get the funding for their travel arrangements. They're coming out on our request, but getting the okay for their travel and hotel accommodations takes a while. Red tape can be a bitch."
"How much money?"
"I don't know. Probably 20,000, at least. More like 50,000.
"I'll pay." Danny wanted to help. In that moment, she needed to do this. Forget all the damn tragedies that happened in her past. This was her way of helping. This project could potentially mean more than their whole town. She wanted on board.
"No, Danny. We can't take your money."
She had money. They just didn't know how much or where it came from. Both stories she wanted to keep quiet about, too. "I want to help. Consider this an investment." Jonah studied her, gauging her commitment. Danny knew what he was doing. He wanted to make sure this was a clear-headed decision, not an emotional one. There was emotion underlying, but Danny clamped down and let her professionalism shine through. Boone always said there was no room for emotion in the boardroom. "I'm single, young, and I've already got a home. I can invest my money how I choose.
This is one of them, and this is a good investment.
This might not be a profitable investment.
Nonprofit grants are great tax write-offs. She had no clue. Jonah hid a smile, but Danny saw it. She won, and she held her hand out. Another second pause, but Jonah reached out and shook on it.
I'm going to be swimming with you guys, at least some of the times. Part of the deal.
Fine by me,
Trenton added, slipping back into the water.
We need all the help we can get.
He took the bucket, saying,
I'm going to swim these out to the boat. It's almost quitting time anyway.
Danny studied Jonah as Trenton left. So this is what you do on the weekdays?
My job description is flexible. I'm supposed to protect the river. Science is slower than business deals. Weekends are an easy sacrifice if it means what I think it'll mean.
Jonah checked his watch and murmured,
Aiden informed me to inform you that you have to be somewhere tonight. They're emceeing a talent show, and your presence is required.
His eyes traced her face and slowly slid downward. Danny's mouth was suddenly parched.
I won't push you right now, but I can't help but wonder what other secrets you've got hidden.
His eyes darkened, lingering on her lips. She'd been right. He hadn't bought the lie. 16. Kate and Aiden were dancing a jig on the stage. Danny skimmed the crowd. Robbie was waving his arms, seated at a round picnic table. As she neared, Danny saw Jonah at a nearby table with Hawk, his arm around a woman with pigtails and another two guys who Danny recognized from high school.
Hey, Danny, we saved you a seat.
Robbie kicked out the empty chair on his left. Stilts was on her other side, with his arm around another girl. Lori sat on Robbie's right with both their chairs turned toward the center stage. Kate was saying,
We were given an announcement to make from the baking committee. They wanted to let you know that due to the sale on lemon pie filling at our wonderful sponsors, Dino's Supermarket, there has been an influx of lemon meringue pies for the pie contest.
As the crowd started to laugh, Kate kept on.
So, they're going to divide the contest into two sections. One section will be just the lemon meringue pies, while the other will be the general pie contest. They will award two winners because of this event.
Aiden laughed, dipping closer to the microphone. Please still bring lemon meringue pies next year. Kate commented as she tried to muffle her microphone, but the crowd still heard.
My pie's one of those. I'm so embarrassed.
The crowd went wild. Kate blushed while Aiden patted her friend on the back.
Don't worry, Kate. There were 20 lemon meringue pies this year. We hit a record.
Another scream filled the air. At the same time, Kate began to announce the next act, but Aiden's microphone caught her.
Brian, you will drop your sister's hair now.
Kate started laughing in the middle of pronouncing the act's name. Aiden flushed this time and murmured to the crowd,
Sorry.
She left the stage and everyone heard,
Leave your brother alone or no pizza tonight. I mean it.
Kate shook her head, still grinning as she departed on the opposite side. Danny sat back and listened to their fantastic attempts at a high E, but she saw Jake and Julia on the opposite side, surrounding a similar table to their own. Kelly, Lynn, and the rest filled the other seats next to them. Jake had been watching her and nodded. Danny waved. Julia frowned. That bothered her, and without thinking, Danny got up. She began to walk around the crowd. Julia's eyes widened when Danny kept walking her way. She stopped right in front of her.
Can I talk to you? Just you and me?
No crowd to cheer you on?
Danny flinched. You and me. Please.
Julia stood and Danny led the way.
Why was she doing this? She wasn't sure, but it felt right.
They were center stage. All eyes were on them, but Danny didn't care. She was starting to care less and less, and when she found a private corner between two horse trailers, she turned around.
When did we become enemies?
Sometime in our childhood? When Mom died? When?
Julia looked down at her hands. She was fidgeting with her shirt.
Why are you doing this?
I don't know, Danny admitted. Maybe because I'm tired of hating something but not knowing what I'm supposed to hate? Maybe because I'm tired of this supposed fight between us?
I don't hate you, Julia. You're my sister. Her words hung in the air. She repeated them.
You're my sister. We share so much.
Like what? Julia snorted. We both lost our mother. We both lost a sister. We both weren't taught how to love each other. And we both loved the same man.
Julia looked away and turned her back.
Danny saw her wrap her arms around herself. It took a second, but she heard,
I love him. Present day. I love him now.
And I remember my love for him. Julia's shoulders arched upward. Danny heard the soft sniffle from behind. Her sister was crying. Her supposedly heartless sister was crying.
I don't want Jake back.
Danny took a breath. I left that night, and he and I, we haven't gone through the process of seeing each other again when we weren't together. Does that make sense? I've thought about him with someone else, but now I'm back. We have to go through that process of seeing each other not together for closure. But I don't want him. I don't love him anymore.
But you used to.
Julia turned back, her hand to her face, as if just waiting to swipe another.